everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You were listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom. Dom, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We didn't even plan on doing two preseason podcasts, but here we are for part three. Are you excited?
Yeah, so Josh dropped this news about 15 minutes after we finished recording part two of that. I think in a very clever point to get himself on preseason before everything kicked off.
You know my strategy too well, Dom. That is literally exactly why this happened.
You're a game changer, Josh. But either way, it worked, and he's here to break it down with us. So, Josh Rickler, how are you?
I am doing really well, Dom. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to be on here. I think this is round two on the Dom and Colin podcast for me. Stoked to be talking some game changers. I mean, we're 5 days, 4 days away from the premiere by the time this is dropping.
Yeah. I mean, Josh, I remember this past July, I met up with you for some lunch in Maine, and you had already
You almost died, and I'm glad that you did not.
That's absolutely true. And I mean, I was just thinking in anticipation of talking to you today, like, you have been waiting since even before then to be able to even finally dive into all of this. So you must be just totally relieved to be able to start publishing. I mean, not even start, but continue publishing. You're probably close to wrapped up by now.
I'm almost done. I'm not completely finished. I have some edits to do on my Haley Ford piece. I have some writing to do on my Sierra Dawn Thomas piece. And then I've got one or two others for Parade and a bunch of stuff that I'm actually going to be doing for Hollywood Reporter as well. So I'm still in the thick of the writing, but it has been fun to finally get this stuff out there. Like you said, I mean, I've been sitting on this since June of 2016 with really nobody to talk to about it. You know, Gordon Dalton occasionally, but really sitting on a lot of this stuff. And especially once the premiere is over and I can really talk about what I got to see out there, I'm looking forward to that. But just even the little bit that is that now we all know what a spy bunker is. Like, I feel like I'm in a safer place now.
Yeah, it is a real first world problem if that's one of the big downsides of the job.
I'm happy to just talk to myself as anyone who's ever listened to me on a podcast knows.
Yeah, I imagine it kind of mirrors the feeling that a lot of the contestants have where, like, they wrap up filming and then they have to wait almost a year for this to actually come out into the open and for everyone to start talking about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've definitely been really eager to finally get into this with people. I mean, you know, the cast list had been out there forever, so everyone, you know, pretty much knew who was going to be on the season. But I feel like, I don't know, you know, how many opinions of people have been changed by any of these preseason stories or the videos that, like, ET Canada have done or the CBS people. I don't know how many preconceived notions have been completely flipped. I feel like, for the most part, we know who these players are. But I think it's always really fun to get inside the heads of the people, like, right before they start. I mean, when we're interviewing them out on location, it is a day, sometimes 2 days before they're deploying out to the actual start of the season. So they're really fired up. And they also can't talk at all pretty much during lockdown at Ponderosa. So they're really ready to talk to somebody. So they get very chatty for these interviews, and it gets, you know, it's really fun. I think that, you know, I hope that translates. I think that they really, you know, they're really bottled up and ready to go by the time
it really does. And I know that officially they're on lockdown, but we hear these stories about, like, Brad putting notes in Debbie's quantum physics book or whatever. Like, they find these creative ways to communicate, it sounds like.
I think that the Ponderosa politics, I think that's really fun. You know, Debbie is really sort of the person who I use to kind of sum up this idea this season, that the game is on. You know, the moment that you're out there, if you're out there on location, even if Probst hasn't said Survivor's ready, go, you're really kind of playing. You're making your impressions at Ponderosa. Like you said, if you're Culpepper, you're passing notes along. I think that he, a lot of people were saying that he was just, like, talking openly. No one could rein in Culpepper. So, you know, I guess you could push the limits if you're a big enough personality.
Reading your interview with him, and it seems story checks out with some of those really long paragraphs.
Oh, God. The Culpepper interview was great. I had a really good time with that one. I think that that might be the best piece of my stuff from the preseason. At least that might be my favorite one. But, yeah, I think everyone's talking, everyone's playing, everyone's, you know, winks and nods going on at Ponderosa. So the game is definitely afoot there.
And story checks out with the hissy fit that he threw at the airport, supposedly, as well. But I know for Cambodia, the pre-gaming was all that anyone could really talk about. And I think that was natural given the format of how that was structured. With this season, and I don't know how much you can talk about this or how much they were even willing to divulge about this, it seemed like that was a lot more on the down low, if it even happened at all.
Yeah, you know, if it happened, and you have to imagine it happened, I didn't gather a lot about it. Like, I didn't catch a lot of wind about it. If Varner is at, like, the center of some crazy pregame alliance Venn diagram, then it's one that I don't know about. And it's one that was kept close to the chest. You know, I think that maybe it's a reaction to the second chance press. Maybe it's just, maybe there's just, less of, maybe there were less dealings that were happening for this season. But at the very least, I really didn't hear about a ton. I mean, you're hearing, like, Sierra Don Thomas has a pregame alliance with Troy Zan. All right, cool.
Not cool. Not cool whatsoever.
So you're hearing, like, little things here and there. But for the most part, that kind of talk was really, really minimal, certainly compared to Second Chance, which was such a treasure trove for that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was going to say,
we know that Varner is very good at keeping information close to his chest. So, it sounds like that's all on the download there. But yeah, Colin, what were you going to say?
Well, no, I was going to say my go-to example was going to be, it's not like we have Jeff Varner out there talking about how he's in a final two with 9 out of 11 people. And then I realized we do have Jeff Varner out there. He's just not talking about that.
Yeah, it's not impossible that Varner did exactly what he did for Second Chance, except he didn't say anything. And, like, not only didn't say anything, but actively told people, I'm not pre-gaming. I did not do any of that this season. You know, said to me, if I do really poorly this season because I did not pre-game, let it be a lesson that all of that talk about not pre-gaming, that's BS to all of you future returnees. Definitely pre-game. Mm-hmm. So, either that's all just like an elaborate Varner ruse or he means it. I don't really know. I don't have any clarity on that issue. I'm sure ghost stories from Game Changers will start to emerge over time, but I've got nothing on the pregame. I think it was definitely at a minimum compared to Second Chance, certainly in terms of chatter before the season.
Josh, is there like a quick link other than I suppose on Twitter at Round Howard, where you're posting all of your articles every day about all of this pregame stuff, but is there anywhere quicker that people can be finding all of this if they want to go, if they've missed any of this and want to find out what all of these people were saying pregame?
Yeah, definitely. So parade.com/survivor, that's just going to take you to all the Survivor stuff that lives on Parade, and that's all of my preseason stuff plus other season stuff that I've covered for them. And specifically for this season, parade.com/survivor game changers will basically take you to a landing page where I'm updating every day, every time I post a new story, and it's presented in the order in which it's meant to be read. So it's a really kind of, it's like a table of contents, basically. So that's probably the one that I would bookmark. And we're getting pretty close to the end. I think there's only going to be like 4 or 5 more posts on that table of contents, and then we're going to be wrapped.
Yeah,
and it's going to be the season, and then we all get to be blindsided together. So it'll be really fun.
Yeah, great stuff. I mean, it has been a very long preseason, I'm sure, for you writing however many thousand words a day, even if it has been something you've been wanting to talk about for a while. And I know that you have been on RHAP talking about all of plenty to do with the preseason. But one thing that, at least so far, we haven't been able to talk about because we wrapped our preseason stuff, as Don mentioned, about half an hour before you broke this news.
The Purple Rock podcast people, they said the same thing. If it had been up to me, this news would have been out there the day that we were releasing all of our stories, or were allowed to start releasing all the stories. And in the first draft of my, big catch-all, everything you know about season 34, this was in the first draft. But it got embargoed until later, maybe wanting to, drop some sort of exciting new twist a little closer to the season. I totally get that in terms of the timing. Just kind of sucks for all you guys who recorded your preview podcast, and now you have to have a third one.
Well, no, I think it's great that we get to have you on to talk about it, but for anyone who has missed it, Josh, can you just get into the broad strokes of what this big new revote twist is?
Sure. So, season's called Survivor Game Changers. Up until now, you're kind of thinking that's it's a reference to the people who are playing, questions about the people who are playing notwithstanding. It seems like the Game Changers are the competitors. I guess it also refers to a rule change or two. At the very least, there is one new twist, one new wrinkle to the rules this season. Unlike seasons past, when you vote at tribal council and you go for a tie, or if you're or if you wind up in a tie situation, normally you re-vote after the tie, and then you really institute the tiebreaker mechanism. You get into the open debate, and then you get to the rock drop. You don't satisfy the debate. This time, the revote is out of the picture. There is no revote. It is straight voting. You get to a tie, and now you are in the tiebreaker. The revote step has been skipped. That will not be happening this season on Survivor Game Changers.
Even if someone just throws away their vote accidentally and flukishly causes a tie and says, whoa, 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 hold up. I will gladly change my vote. Let's not go to rocks. There is no technicality where if there's not a clear decision after the first vote, it either means you guys are going to come to a unanimous decision or we're going to rocks no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the Survivor rulebook, Colin, so I couldn't tell you in that case. But my understanding would be tie is a tie. If you screwed up, if you didn't get, you know, if you weren't with the plan, if you're Keith Nail and you've just been completely left out in the cold and you have no idea what's going on and your vote accidentally ties things up, yeah, you're in a tie. And now you guys got to figure out unanimously who's going to go or you're going to draw rocks.
I was going to say, I love that this opens the door for so many just accidental rock draws, right?
Yes.
And we kind of had a similar thing in the most recent season where, like, Will expected Jess to flip, so he kept his vote the same, but then she also kept her vote the same. So then they ended up drawing rocks when no one expected them to. But, like, that's a very rare niche situation, whereas this, like, it's within the realm of possibility that everyone goes in there not intending to draw rocks, not even thinking that's going to be a possibility, and then one tiny thing goes wrong, the vote ends up tied somehow, and everything just blows up from there.
Yeah. It's entirely possible. You would wonder, is that going to happen in a season with people who've played, you know, some of these people four times now? It's certainly possible. It's not impossible.
Yeah.
Well, I think actually it might even make it more realistic then, because some of them will be more willing to draw rocks than someone who, you know, maybe they think this is their only time to play Survive and they really value that chance and they're just going to flip to avoid that happening. Yeah. And then also, as we've seen so many times before, it only takes one person doing something harebrained to mess everything up.
Totally.
And if you're expecting all the votes to go a certain way and then one of those votes changes, that can really just throw a wrench in everything.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about, you know, returning players who might be willing to go to rocks. There's been three rock draws in Survivor history, and two of the main participants in two of those rock draws are out here in Game Changers.
Yeah, interesting. What do you think...
In Zeke and Sierra, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think prompted this twist?
Well, so Probst gives his answer. You know, in my interview with Jeff, he brought up the fact that this is going to be one of the twists to the game. They announce it to the Game Changers. The clip is already is really out there in my story, in Dalton Ross's story. So it's out there to check out before the first immunity challenge. Probst is going to reveal this news to both tribes. There's no revote after the tie this season. You get your myriad reactions. There's a really great Aubrey Bracco facial reaction, I think, is pretty good there. So I think the idea behind it, according to Probst, is there was this idea of, like, this free look into the future is what he describes it. In fact, I can pull up the exact quote if you give me 1 second. Let's see what he says. Yeah, so he says there was this idea of this free look into the future. This is an idea he arrived at during the shooting of Millennials versus Gen X. I realized last season that they're getting this free look into the future. They want to know if somebody has an idol, and we have enough people in our alliance that we can actually split the votes for free and change them on the revote. And nothing on Survivor should be free. The emphasis on the word free is what stood out to me. They didn't have to pay for it. Survivor is a game in which everything should have an invoice. Every single decision you make should come with the risk of costing you something. Now it will. If you want to know if somebody has an idol, you're going to have to be willing to risk the consequence that if you don't make a move, you might find yourself in a tiebreaker and you might go home. So I think it's got to be, you know, born from Zeke bringing the Millennials versus Gen X tribal council to rocks. I think it's got to be stemming from there. And I think also probably when you have a season called Game Changers, you probably are starting to look for opportunities to twist and turn the game a little bit. So I think it's kind of a perfect storm of all of those things coming together.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was the exact impetus for the change, because we've had ties since the beginning of the show, obviously, and then idols have been around in their current form for about two-thirds of the show's entire run now. So you would think that this discussion would have come up at some point, because we've basically seen all of the ways that idols in their current form can play out now. So I was wondering why it was this exact moment that they chose to revamp everything.
Yeah, I think that it's probably just the fact that, you know, we just got to our third rock draw. Like, it's 33 seasons and it's only three rock draws. It's pretty wild. And I think that that's probably a moment where, like, you know what? This is not a bad opportunity to mess around with some stuff. I think also just with what the season is even called, I think that there's just more of an impetus. Like, let's throw some stuff at the wall, see if it sticks. If it doesn't stick, what are you going to do? If it does stick, good on us. So I think that they're willing to try some stuff this year.
Did anyone cop to any thoughts along the lines of, like, hey, and it also wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if we didn't have to dedicate you know, 90 seconds to 2 minutes to all these revotes with all these people splitting all these votes.
Yeah, 155,000%. Yeah, you know, Probst was very open about that with me too, where he was basically like, yeah, this would also be great for the show. Like, it's a little frustrating that, like, people are ahead of us, you know, by like 30 seconds when we get to the revote. They already know what the revote's going to be. You certainly have exceptions to those rules where, you know, the revote does produce really good, strong drama. But very often it is kind of just like, all right, well, you know, you could probably fast forward to the conclusion of what's going to come up next. So yeah, I think that they're, you know, they're shaving time where they can here, I think, on the show as well.
And because of how the timing of the show has to work, some of that drama is necessarily suppressed in advance. So if, when they're going to vote, you know that there's 5 or 6 minutes left. You know that the only way that can be true is if there's going to be a revote. So any suspense for the first vote kind of goes out the window at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Josh, I know that you mentioned just off air a little while ago to me that you had quite a public response just having posted this on Twitter and seeing what people were saying about it. What has the public reaction been to this twist?
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I mean, I dropped the news on Twitter on a Tuesday, and my timeline just exploded. It went nuclear pretty much immediately after, and the reactions were all over the board. There were tons of people who were like, that's bogus. That's a terrible twist. I have from a few people saying that, like, it's really just built to help out people who find idols more easily. I think that there are some people who are super excited about it, who are really excited about the strategic possibilities of now really having to figure out, all right, well, if we can't split the votes, what's the new way to do this? What's the new way to achieve this goal? So it's really, I even put a poll up, and for a while it was 50-50 good, bad. I'm trying to see where it ultimately netted out to. I think it was like 60-40 basically is where we ended up. Yeah, 60-40 exactly. 60 good. Good, 40 bad. So more people than not, at least on my Twitter feed, seem to like the twist. I think both of you guys are into it, right?
I definitely am. Yeah, I imagine Dom is as well. I am all about, I guess I just generally feel like Survivor at this point, 33 seasons into it, if it wasn't for stuff like this getting thrown into the game, it would continue to just be, the players would get good enough that it would be so much easier over the course of time to stay in the majority without stuff like this, like for the people in the numbers to be successful and just stick together. So I love having stuff like this come into play. And I guess plenty of people probably out there would say that this is like fundamentally opposed to what Survivor is. Like, Survivor should be about getting the most people together. And I know this is like what Debbie said in some interview that you had with her about how, oh, you know, these idols are taking all the skill out of the game, things along those right. lines. Like, I really couldn't disagree more.
Yeah, after thinking about it a little bit, I was immediately on board. After having thought about it a bit more, I'm still on board. And maybe when the season plays out and it doesn't go the way I expected, you will have to reevaluate. But I love that they're willing to change up and try new things, because I don't think anyone, like, even if you think this is a bad change on balance, I don't think anyone before they knew this was happening was really a passionate defender of the current system. And so, yeah, if they try this out and it doesn't go as expected, they can go back to the status quo for every other season. But the fact that they're willing to at least open the door to this and try it on a season with players who are going to explore every dimension of that idea, I really like that. And I'm hopeful that we're going to see it come to really display its full potential.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's something that Probst talks about a lot is, like, Survivor, you know, Survivor fans tend to be pretty forgiving, like, when a twist is terrible. You know, as long as, like, they get away from the twist, people tend to just, you know, keep coming back to Survivor because they're Survivor fans. Like, they'll never do the Medallion of Power again. They heard the message. They got it. I think that maybe, like, you have no idea if Exile Island will ever come back, or even Redemption Island, because they think that there's still split thinking on that. But I think that more often than not, like, when the fan base is really vocal about something, even if that doesn't affect the thinking of what's going on in Survivor, like if it doesn't change the thing of what's going on in Survivor, it's being listened to. And I like that they take swings. I think that this is one that's worth playing out. I haven't really thought, you know, in great detail about how it can play out. I'd love to hear if, like, you guys have any ideas of, like, some of the ways that you could really use this to your advantage, like what some of the emergent strategy of this twist might be going out there in Game Changers.
Yeah, I haven't thought of any, like, hacks to it yet, but I just love, and I've been coming up with just scenarios where what I like so much about this twist is it opens the door for just things to go wrong for the majority in the event that the minority, like, can play the situation perfectly, and then there is no revote to bail you out. Like, Josh, I know you are a fan of The Genius, and we see on a ton of The Genius games, there are a lot of dilemmas just where, yes, we have the numbers, and in a perfect world, this could definitely go well, but there's at least some possibility for the minority to have room to maneuver around it, and I think just including that element more is so good for the game in Survivor. And that's more what I'm seeing is, like, these situations, like, the first one that jumped to my mind is if there's, like, a super majority or whatever where they have, say it's, like, 6-2, if they split it 3-3, suddenly if there's a tie, it's between the two people who are, so it's between the two people who are in the minority, and then the majority is drawing rocks. So it forces them to pick a target, which makes an idol so much more powerful, and I'm all about leveraging whatever it takes to get the minority more room to play in Survivor.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, the appeal of this twist, if you think it is appealing, is not that in some weird corner case that only happened one out of every 100 seasons it could cause something interesting. It's in this very common default scenario, which we see almost every season now, is going to really bring some new life into it and force people to really think about it in a way that they don't have to at the moment. So yeah, as you say, normally if there is like this crushing majority, they can just split the votes. They know that that's the mathematically obvious and secure play. And, you know, you see things like the people in the minority can try to vote for each other, like Alex did with Mookie and Fiji, and try and like survive one more round that way. But that doesn't lead to anything permanent. And also, that just isn't really that interesting, even when it works. Like, I don't think coming out of that episode, people were like, oh my God, Alex survived for one more episode, right?
I mean, I was pretty pumped. Big Alex fan over here.
I was a big really. Mookie fan, I was heartbroken. Okay. Yeah.
But
yeah, as Colin said, like if you split it evenly, so you split it like 3-3, let's say, then that automatically is a recipe for disaster now, because if the minority doesn't do anything strange, then you're going to a tie, almost certainly. So you now have to think, well, do we split it 4-2 instead? But then if there's an idol and the person with four votes gets it, then it's 2-2, and that could be an issue. Or even if there's no idol, if, let's say two more votes go on that person somehow, so like it's 4-4, and then there's a tie. So you actually have to think about all the different possibilities now in a way that you simply don't have to at the moment. Because right now, even if you think there's an idol in play, you just split it. And that's why you split it in the first place, because that's the guaranteed way that we've seen time and time again of nullifying the idol's power.
Right. I mean, I guess not guaranteed. We've certainly seen split votes go wrong, but this opens the door so much more that I think the mere threat of something going wrong is going to talk a lot of people out of going with plans that if there were revotes in play would be no-brainers, and just opening the door for that, like opening the door for people to have kind of like backup schemes of like, oh, well, I think we're going to start seeing potentially a lot more people getting taken out from within the majority before the minority is even gone. I think that's going to be like a natural byproduct, is people feeling like they have to have some other safer method.
And that's the hidden, unstated downside of the status quo, I think. So that if you are someone who doesn't really stand out within the majority, you're happy to go along for the ride. If you know that your group is spreading the votes, you can just be fairly safe in knowledge that nothing can really go wrong. If something does go wrong, it's not going to affect you in all likelihood. And you can just cast your vote for whoever you've been told to vote for, and that's it. And you can just go nap for the rest of the day. You know, this way, there is a possibility if something goes wrong, you will end up drawing a rock and going home. And that fear is always going to be looming over people's heads and causing them to maybe make bad decisions, or at least be making decisions and not just resting on their laurels.
Yeah. One of the things that Probst said to me during this interview on Location, he said, this might mean that people are going to quickly figure out that there could be opportunities where a minority alliance can place a vote on one of their own members to force a tie and then say, I'm willing to draw because there's only three of us and there's six of you. How likely is something like that, do you think?
I mean, I think it's relatively likely in that exact kind of scenario. Like, if it comes down to it where forcing a tie, like, there are definitely going to be people out there, particularly on this season, who, if it comes down to that, will happily say, I would imagine, sure, sign me up for a 3 out of 9 rock draw. If that's, you know, if we don't have an idol and we can't get the majority by flipping anyone else, that's absolutely a great plan. But, and that's what I mean, where the majority then has to consider people in the minority putting their votes in such a way that they could do that. And it just complicates everything.
Yeah, there is no guaranteed safe option anymore. Right. And that's what I really love about this in theory. I do think that possibility that you raised, Josh, is fairly likely. Because if you have someone who is in the minority, is a fairly creative thinker, is willing to take the risk or the embarrassment of like voting of telling someone to vote for them, and then it goes wrong, and actually it doesn't go according to plan. They end up voting themselves out effectively. If you're willing to shoulder that burden, then the payoff potentially is very high. And I think if we have players on the season who I think would be willing to take that risk and potentially reap the rewards that come with it.
So I guess my question then after that, like all of that sounds really exciting. You know, that sounds like really, you know, lots of potential in a lot of those different permutations. But what's the extreme worst case scenario that you can think of? Like for the people who are really concerned about the rule change affecting things, like what's the most boring TV version of this? Like is there a way for this to get hacked in a way that would be crappy for television?
So I think if you're someone who doesn't really like the idea of idols in principle, or you think that in their current incarnation they're just a bit boring or maybe a bit too overpowered, this does exacerbate all of those problems. Like it does mean that if a minority alliance finds the idol, it's easier for them to overturn its majority. It's done a lot of work to cement the fact that they've done well in the game and being able to win people over to their side. I can't think off the top of my head of any of these like weird edge cases where it does turn out very badly for TV purposes. But Colin, maybe you have some ideas on that.
Well, I think it's the same risk that you run anytime that any number of people are going to put their hands into the bag is having the big power player draw the rock. And now we're just making rocks all the more likely and making that situation all the more likely. Like pick any example you want, but say they go to rocks in South Pacific and like Sophie or coach draws the rock, someone who's really at the center of the game. I definitely think that is, if we end up seeing that come into play, that could be one of the major criticisms launched against this, is it seems like we are increasing the likelihood of someone who otherwise was in complete control actually just leaving on a fluke.
Yeah, just getting Pascaled out of the game.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, that's a great example. Dominant alpha male Pascal.
Yeah, the epitome of a dominant alpha male.
But equally, though, I think those seasons where you have a dominant player or a dominant alliance are often not rated as the most interesting seasons by the fans. You know, if Boston Rob, even if you're a fan of Rob, watching him go wire to wire, it's great insofar as you're a fan of him, but it's not great for the wider TV audience.
Kim in One World is another good example. Like, if those are like two of the people who are looked at as like the best to ever play, well, they come from like the worst seasons of Survivor.
Right, yeah. And it's always been the downside of Survivor that the mathematical structure of the show leads itself to people taking control, and then something very odd has to happen for them to lose that control. And I love that. You know, this becomes almost like Big Brother in a sense, but you can flip things around and actually overturn that permanently. I guess the one reservation I have is that a lot of the most interesting consequences of this are not things you're often going to see on the actual TV broadcast. So if you have this majority alliance who they can't split the votes anymore, they have to come up with a new plan. So maybe they just pile all their votes on one person or they do something else. You might often only see the way that vote happens. You're not going to see the 2 hours of frantic scrambling that this caused before that, unless they find a good and convenient way to show that on TV.
Yeah. Who do you think? Go for it, Con.
Well, I was going to just ask. I was just reading. Someone referenced that this kind of twist may make the TV product better because it won't be more as much like Cambodia, where all they're talking about are like what's the right formula to split the vote at what time and who to play. But I do feel like, at least on the beach, and as Dom said, maybe this won't be reflected nearly as much on the TV product. I do feel like, though, at least this opens the door, I think this opens the door to even more possibilities, and I think the actual conversations on the beaches could be even more strategically in depth than we've ever seen before.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, is this, if you're like a voting block guy, is this great news? Is this bad news? Does this encourage voting blocks more? Does it discourage voting blocks?
I think it means, for me at least, I think it means if you are a person who thrives in a chaotic environment, like a Tony Vlachos, for instance, this is good news where you want people to be nervous round after round and not feel comfortable.
Yeah, I think it feeds into some of the same factors that went into voting blocks, trust clusters, whatever we're calling them nowadays, because I think it means that now, as someone who is in that majority, you have to really think, who in the minority can I connect with? I need to make sure that I am valued by all the other people in the group, because one thing that can easily happen is, let's say it does go to a tie, whether accidentally or otherwise, you need to make sure that there's no unanimous agreement that can come against you. And if you're someone who, let's say you're some like fifth wheel in the majority alliance, they may think it's time to cut their losses, and even though they're losing a reliable vote, that's better than them personally and some of their closest friends having to draw rocks. So they might think, all right, we can just avoid the risk altogether, cut this person loose, and then move forward with our slightly smaller group. So you need to make sure that you are valued enough by other people that that can't happen to you.
Right. One thing
I was going to say, like, that makes, you know, trust is already such a delicate issue out there. You know, the way that you just, like, I just got paranoid hearing that, you know, like, it's...
Yeah. And you also have to think that people in that majority might have different views about which of the tied people they want to go home. So, like, if I'm in that majority and I'm planning to flip eventually, but the person I'm planning to flip over to because I think they're the only one I can beat is in that tie, well, I'm not going to agree to anything that involves that person going home. So maybe other people knowing that have to vote for someone else. And, like, you have these levels upon levels now where, like, each person's individual interests come into play in a way that they really didn't if it's just, okay, three votes go here, three votes go here, they're on a revote. Like, that doesn't really happen in the same way there.
I'm all about, you know, I bring up, like, oh, I'm mad that they take away these individual rewards where people have to pick people, because I love it when they give them an opportunity to make a mistake on Survivor. And I think that that possible deliberation after a tie, like, okay, you guys have to come to a unanimous decision, if someone's, like, hesitating about, oh, maybe I want to go to a rocks instead of keeping this person, and then they come around, like, and they both are back at camp that night, like, I think that could blow up some possible, like, relationships, just not even committing to going to rocks, but even hesitating on wanting to keep people.
Yeah, do you think, you know, well, do you think that we're going to go to rocks more because of this? Like, do you think we're going to see a rock draw on Game Changers? Would that be your guess?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's unlikely. I think we are more likely to see a fluke rock draw in Game Changers than we are a deliberate rock draw.
I think we're going to see the prospect of a rock draw being used as leverage or really weighing on people's decisions. But as I said, this is the worry, maybe, that you can't go into their heads and see exactly how that's changing their minds. All you can see is the final product. And so maybe what you see is what might look like on paper to be fairly conventional gameplay, which actually is informed by this new rule, but you don't get to see just how important that ends up being.
Yeah, Dom, you mentioned Big Brother, where we've always been a fan of the Big Brother format, where every single round the minority has at least a chance to overtake the power and win the head of household competition. And I feel like it's probably weighing in a lot for people that we've always just had revotes, and that's just the way it's always been on Survivor. But I feel like that's totally, as we're seeing, that's totally able to change. And I'm totally in favor of this. Like, I think it's great for the game evolution, and I really think it's going to add a ton to the game for sure. And I'm really, really excited to see how it plays out. But Josh, I'm curious, you mentioned Jeff had that idea of, oh, a person in the minority could put their vote in whatever direction to force a tie and voluntarily go to rocks if they think that's their best bet. Did you hear of any other emergent game strategy ideas while you were out there?
No, that's all he tossed out there. And I didn't get to talk it through with too many people myself. So that's really all I've got for now. This is why I'm really stoked to have it out there, though, because immediately there were just like 100 different possible interpretations of how this could play out within like 5 seconds of posting the thing. So people are really taking it and running with it. And I'm really curious to see what they do with it on the season. It's really fun when the moment that it happens, like the moment that Probst reveals this new twist, like watching them, like it wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't like a huge physical reaction from the people playing the game, or at least not from everybody. But I felt like you could see like some people were kind of just like standing there and not really, maybe not processing it or not chewing on it all the way. And then there were some of like the people who you would think of more, you know, like more of the strategically savvy types of players who like are clearly living with this news for a second. And I think that it's going to take a while for some of these people to figure out exactly, you know, whether or not this is a major impact on their game, if it's a minor impact on their game. But they're wrestling with it in that moment. It was really fun to see.
I think it's got to be a major impact on everyone's game. I think this is legitimately a total game changer, just throwing that wrench in there of just the sheer possibility of one vote going wrong and suddenly we're all at rocks. So if we have a big majority, how can we not justify putting all 7 of our votes on one person or whatever?
Yeah.
I love also that these volatile players potentially, and there aren't as many of them on this season,
right?
No, like Abby Maria type or whoever, but those people who are liable to just change their vote for no apparent reason, like those people have a lot more power, I guess you could call it now. Like you have to manage those people a lot more carefully because, like, often they can follow basic instructions, like okay, you're voting for this person as part of a split vote, but like if they But if something has to change on the fly, or then they go off the handle and vote for someone else, that can just destroy the entire plan now. Like, so they can, you could see someone changing their vote just on a whim and ending up like effectively rocking themselves out of the game because of it.
So who are the people that you would identify for that? Like you said, Tony before, like who else would you be really cautious of in terms of somebody who could like screw things up for everybody else?
Ty Trang would be number one on my board.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of like an Abby Maria type, but I don't know who really fits that bet on the season. I guess Debbie potentially. I can see that, but yeah, I think like if this is in place for other seasons, so regular seasons, I think you'll see it come into play in a different way. But I think with this specific cast, you know, you're going to see the kind of outer limits of that being explored a lot more quickly and a lot more readily.
Yeah, I mean, I do struggle to think of like who is that volatile of this cast. I mean, say what you will about this cast, I think that that level of volatility, I think, is at a minimum compared to Second Chance at the very least.
Yeah.
Let's get into just some specific scenarios, Cody, that keep coming up, because I think we can talk about it in the abstract, but it's fun to see how it might actually play out in practice. So one thing that can come up a lot is, if you have exactly two people in the minority and this big majority alliance is trying to split the vote between them, just in case there is an idol. So let's say it's like split 4-2. So the majority is exactly twice the size of the minority. The standard straightforward idea there is, okay, we split it 2-2 versus 2. And then regardless of what they do, if everyone on our side stays true, there's basically no way they can overcome that. Now that becomes a little more interesting because if you split it 2-2 versus 2 again, you have this three-way tie between the minority people and whoever they vote for. But the only people who have to quote-unquote vote, so break that tie, come to this unanimous consensus, are the people in the majority who can just do whatever they want. So in theory, that should still be fairly straightforward. However, now, if there is an idol in play, the person who plays it is not only safe, but they get to take part in that discussion, and they can just veto any attempt to come to this unanimous agreement. And so if there is an idol being played, now it doesn't just keep that person safe for one round, it potentially drags everyone else into that rock draw as well, and they can't really do anything about that.
I hadn't even considered that those votes would not count, and they wouldn't technically be part of the tie. So yeah, the minority person with the idol could just veto whatever the decision was, and then they wouldn't even have to draw a rock themselves.
Right, and you could see it being like a weird way to get someone from your own alliance out of the game. Like if you can convince the minority people to cooperate with you and put their votes on this one person in the majority that you want to get out, then like if you split the votes and that person is part of the tie, then coincidentally, right, you know, the rest of your people can come to that agreement and vote that person out instead.
Right. I think generally speaking, what we are going to see is that the idol is just is going to have a tremendous amount of weight, even more so than it already does, because of that veto ability. Basically, if you play the idol and you get to automatically participate, if it does end up coming down to this, especially if you're in the minority, that's tremendous to have that going as leverage. But I think this is going to be something, just this rule change in general. Like, I really feel like it took a long, long time for even the Survivor viewing audience, certainly the players in the audience, to get really like fluent in what good Survivor strategy even is. And I think this is honestly such a complicated wrench to throw into the game that I think it's going to take a long time for us to even really fully think about the true ramifications of what this means and the classic scenarios that a couple years from now are going to be no-brainers for us.
Yeah, I think what's fun is like the second vote or the vote cancel. Like, we haven't really even figured out how to use those. You know, like there's a lot of ingredients in Survivor right now that have been introduced pretty recently that still haven't had enough time to really reveal themselves, like really show what they're capable of or what you're capable of doing when you have that power in your possession. I agree. I think that this is going to be one of those things that you have to see it play out for a little while before you really fully understand how it works. In terms of this kind of strengthening the power of an idol, how does this twist work in conjunction with like a fake idol? Does this give a fake idol any more power than it's had before, do you think?
Yeah, because the threat of them being part of that discussion is so much more critical, where on a revote, you just have so much more control when you're in the majority, whereas with no revote and the threat of someone with an idol being able to veto whatever decision you would otherwise be able to come to through the means of a revote, I would imagine that just merely threatening and showing a convincing idol is going to do a lot more damage than it otherwise would have.
And I think that's where this, like, is kind of fun, part and parcel with the fact that the idols all look different now. Like, that's the status quo of idols on Survivor. Like, no two idols are going to look the same.
That's for sure confirmed?
Yeah, that's just the way that it is right now, at least, yeah. So idols, as far as I'm aware, you know, they don't look the same.
Well, they did in Millennials versus Gen X.
Is that right?
I'm pretty sure they did.
Well, so... if you can reveal this, Josh, do if the idols aren't going to look different this season, do the contestants know about that up front? Like, does Jeff say, okay, the idols aren't all going to be identical? Because
it's honestly just my assumption. I'm not, you know, revealing anything here that I secretly know. You know, okay. that's my feeling of where idols are with Survivor right now.
I really hope we get to see someone see an idol which they think is fake, but which is actually real, and so they like pull their bluff and end up going disastrously wrong.
Well, that's something that they've been wanting to do at least since Second Chances idols were all different. I don't think that that's any different this season, but I could be definitely wrong. Don't take my word as gospel for it. But I think that that's where this gets interesting now. You know, like, you know, that's where a fake idol can now has the opportunity to be really convincing.
Yeah.
So I think having this running parallel along with this rule change, I think, could be very interesting.
Yeah, we were staunchly in favor of all of the idols looking different and the players knowing that for sure up front.
Yeah, I think the other way a fake idol
would be my assumption.
Play...
Like, if I were coming back and playing this season, like, my automatic assumption at this point, like, if I'm going out on Survivor from this point, I'm just assuming that idols look different. That's my go-to thinking. That's my baseline level of thinking.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the other way a fake idol would come into play now is if you're in a minority and you're trying to go with this plan of we're going to vote for each other to try and, like, force this tie, which is unexpected, you need to know who those votes are being split between. Because if you, like, put your votes on the person who doesn't receive any votes, then you've blown it all. So if you can produce a fake idol, then you can force people to split the votes so that they include you, because otherwise, like, that, you know, they need to flush the idol if it's if you don't play it. So that can then give you more information as to, like, who you would need to vote for, who other people in your group would need to vote for. So, like, you can try to I can't even think of a good metaphor here, but you can try to, like, lead their votes in the wrong direction.
Have you thought of any scenarios where it's almost better to be in the minority because of this rule? Especially, I would imagine it would include having an idol. But have you found any hacks yourself, Dom? Because I know that's always the angle you're taking.
So the thing that I like about this from a game balance point of view is all of those typical advantages of having a majority still survive to some degree. So you can still split the votes in a lot of cases, but you have to be more careful about it. You know, you do get that reward for building this alliance and keeping it together. However, there are, you know, the minority can get their foot in the door now in a way that they simply couldn't before, unless someone in that majority flipped. I will say it does mean that the threat of someone from your own group flipping is a lot more important now. So, yeah. Like, we saw, for instance, with JT and Ceree, two of the game changers on the season, like, JT was able to set up all the votes so that there was a split, and that gave him cover to flip over and Tom could use the idol, and then, you know, the votes worked exactly the way he wanted them to. And I think that kind of thing is in a way, going to be harder to set up now, because if you're trying to sell people on spreading the votes, that's no longer automatic. You need to have a very clear plan of, like, this is how we're going to accomplish that, this is how it's insured against all of these terrible things happening. But we never really saw, outside of JT and Ceree, we never really saw that move being used. So maybe that's a sacrifice that we're willing to make.
Yeah, that was my thought as well, is it seems like in the event now when people are going for a plan that does involve splitting votes, every single one of those votes is so critical. And if someone, I know, like, Tyson votes himself out by switching his vote, like, I think we could see something along those lines, like someone super critically, like, messes one thing up and then draws the bad rock. Like, I think we are definitely in store if this continues to be the new rule for Survivor going forward, which, sight unseen, I think I am hoping for. I am really optimistic about how this is going to play out, just because it's opening the door for so many more disaster scenarios for the majority.
Yeah, I can also see, like, let's say you want to flip away from that majority. normally I think you would need there to be an idol somewhere in there so you could do that. I think this way, if you know that there's someone else in your group who no one really has any use for and no one would be willing to risk their own life in the game to defend, you can try and flip to force a tie on that person, and now you can essentially say, like, okay, if you don't come to an agreement and you vote out this person, we're all going to rocks, and you have to live with that. And so if you're willing to put yourself out there and kind of issue that ultimatum, then whenever you can threaten a tie or force a tie, then you can basically get whatever you want. If you have this read on the other players that they're not willing to take that risk, you can really hammer that home and use that whenever you can.
Like if you have like a Philip Shepherd type out there where you're like, look, just give up Philip and we can all go home, we can all go back to camp and sleep fine tonight.
Or you have a Cochrane in his first season who is just deathly afraid of going to rocks. Like you can really harness those fears if you're able to perceive them.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, Josh, one other thing that I definitely wanted to quickly ask you about is another twist coming into play pertaining to the idols, which is they're all going to be entering the game in different ways this time. Some may be at camp, some maybe at a challenge. One, I hear, may even be at tribal council, is at least in the mix. What do we know about that rumor before.
Like, I don't have that confirmed at all, but I hope that they do that eventually because it's such a great idea. And you could just imagine, like, the mad dash for the urn. It would just be incredible.
We speculated about this in one of our – at some point during our 5 hours of preseason coverage, which I'm sure sounds like nothing to you.
No, I'm not here to judge. I'm not here to judge.
We speculated, yeah, at the voting booth or, like, by the fire. I'm curious – do you think if it was hidden on Jeff Probst's person, would Survivor be jumping the shark, or would that be an awesome hiding spot?
I don't think that after almost getting kissed by Dawson, not Max, I don't think that like Jeff is in any rush to like get people to rush him. I don't think that he would sign off on having like the idol be like a conch shell necklace around his neck. Right. I don't think that that would be his thing. I think like a more likely idea. I think I saw like the voting urn, like the top of the urn could be one, or like a pen could be an idol, or some rock around the fire or something like that. That would be such a, you know, if the immunity challenge as a location to find an idol is already so exciting, can you just imagine an idol at Tribal, which is already such a dramatic place? It would be wild.
I mean, especially because the person would obviously not know going into that Tribal Council that they had an idol or not. And that could be a total game changer to make up a totally new term.
They just have to go for it. Like, they know exactly where it is, but, like, they've just got to make the move.
Yeah.
It'd be cool.
I think one of the most interesting things, sorry to jump in, that we've seen throughout the entire time we've had idols on the show is, and maybe this is just my own view on this, but in Gabon, where like you had this idol out in the open at that merge feast, and there was this tension of like, is anyone actually going to go and grab it? Is someone going to really put themselves out there with all the social stigma that's going to bring to them? And like eventually we saw Marcus throw the idol in the ocean, then get voted out the next week. Like that to me was one of the most interesting and unique ways that we've seen that play out so far.
Yeah, I'm all about having idols that look different, as I said before, and having idols enter the game in various different ways. And I would be very much for Jeff telling that to them at the beginning of the game so they know, hey, any idol could be legitimate through any claim of where it came from.
Yeah, I think that – I don't know if there's any sort of spiel that's like that, but I think that at least Survivor's philosophy towards the people that are on the show is like, you guys better know that's a possibility anyway. I think their philosophy, their answer to that would probably be something along the lines of like, you should know that. You're playing Survivor. Like that should go without saying that's a possibility.
Well, hold on. One thing I just thought of is I know there's been this long-standing rule, which is never really invoked or questioned, that you can't vote for yourself. Do we know if that's still the case?
Yeah, so I mean, I got to imagine that's still the case. Like, that's a rule that, like, you would have to announce for sure. But that's not the first time I've heard that in connection to this. Gregory McBean had tweeted at me that same exact idea. Like, now would be a great time to be able to vote for yourself so that you could intentionally tie things up.
Yeah. And how great would that be for TV, right? Like, if someone votes for themselves, they have this master plan to, like, split the votes in this weird, unique way, and then actually it's a lot more simple than that, and they just ended up voting themselves out of the game. Like, that is like an Eric Reichenbach level mistake in their eyes, and they could really portray it as such.
Every time
she voted
I hear
out her mom, and then she voted for herself.
Every time I hear about this, though, I really just feel like way more often than not, the I want to vote for myself would be used the way that in some early Exile Island tribal council, Shane Powers said, I would love to be able to just vote for myself and just not have
he just tosses a vote at Aris, right? Like, just like completely, you know, just like throwing it off the target.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think that would be way more often the case than not of someone voting for themselves is to just essentially abstain, which I am not at all cool with at tribal council.
Yeah, so much my dreams.
Yeah, so much indeed.
Coach would have voted for himself at that Boston Rob Russell tribal council. He would have felt very self-righteous about
it. Exactly.
Yeah, I like forcing people to pick sides, and I don't want things to degenerate into like half of the tribe is voting for themselves because they don't want to commit to anything. One aspect that I do like about this is, as you said, previously people could just hedge their bets. Like on the first vote, if they wanted to flip, they could just vote as normal and see where the votes went, and then maybe flip on the revote if they wanted to. This way, you have to do everything up front, and so other people can like issue these threats. You can say, okay, we are willing to go to rocks. We have exactly half of the people here, and if you try and force a tie with us, there's no chance for any of you to flip or any of us to flip. You're going to rocks. So you have to decide now, here and now, if you're willing to do that. And so, like, if someone is willing to issue that threat, even if maybe they don't believe it, or even if they don't have the vote secure, then they can end up winning a vote that way, or maybe someone has the balls of steel to actually call them on that and call their bluff. So I think you're going to see players who are like assertive and bold and willing to kind of put themselves out there and risk like looking bad or risk drawing votes to themselves. Like, they can really be effective. And I think, like, Tony, for instance, like, if Tony's in that kind of minority scenario, there's a lot more room for him to just cause havoc now and really mess with people's heads because, as we said, this forces everyone to think about their own position and think about what can happen.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Really looking forward to the Game Changers season premiere this Wednesday. Josh, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure. Very instructive for me to hear you guys talk it all through. That was really fun. So hope some of that stuff comes to light. It's going to be a really cool season, I think.
All right, parade.com/survivor is where you go to find all of the articles?
That would be right. Yeah, and parade.com/survivor game changers is straight to the Game Changers stuff.
Excellent. At Round Howard on Twitter. Dom is at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. Dom, anything else you want to get in before we get out of here?
Well, always so much more we can talk to Josh about for a future time, maybe. But for now, Josh, thank you for coming on. And, really excited to see how this whole season plays out.
Yeah, and, just let me know when you want me back, and I will happily appear. You don't even have to say my name 3 times.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much for listening. We will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.